Holt rubbed his beard. It was them or me, Danny. You have to believe that. Danny rocked back on her heels and sat on the floor. I believe you. Colt never gave her a reason to doubt his sincerity. The army, however, had done plenty to erode her trust. Every last bit of it. She tugged on the hem of her sweatshirt to cover her bare legs. Colt motioned toward the pack.
I've got a pair of pants in there you can put on. One of the legs is ripped off above the knee. If you do the same with the other side, you'll have some long shorts.
She nodded and dug through his pack before pulling out the pants. After cutting off the full leg to match the other, she pulled them on. They fell right off. Danny laughed and her throat threatened to close up, partly from the smoke inhalation during the fire, and partly from exhaustion and too many emotions she struggled to keep in check.
Danny.
She didn't look up.
Danny, look at me.
She risked a quick glance.
Are you okay? They didn't.
Colt struggled with the words.
When I found you, you didn't have any clothes on. They didn't hurt you, did they?
Danny shook her head. No. I locked myself in the bathroom once I decided to escape. The blanket wasn't long enough, so I used my clothes to extend it as far as I could. She grabbed the two big pants and sat down. I was halfway through the window when a soldier broke through the bathroom door. Colt waited for a moment before asking what she hoped he wouldn't.
What happened?
She shrugged and grabbed at the tie to her sweatshirt, pulling it through the hood as she replied. If she focused on the task, she wouldn't have to look him in the eye. I was in my underwear, and he grabbed me around the throat, shoved me up against the shower wall. Her fingers shook, but she still managed to feed the tie through the belt loops on the pants, one by one. At first I panicked, but then she risked a glance up at Colt. He looked at her with such compassion and patience. He didn't make her feel ashamed or afraid. He was a good man.
You fought back?
Danny nodded and went back to working on the makeshift belt. She tied it around her waist as she answered. I used my fingers, just like you showed me. Two spears, I gouged out his eyes. Saying it out loud made it so very real. Danny couldn't believe what she had done. She chewed on her lip and focused on the floor. After a moment, Colt exhaled.
Good job, Danny. I'm proud of you.
Her eyes flicked up. You are? Colt nodded.
It takes real courage to do what you did. And to run through that fire, you're a survivor, that's for damn sure.
She smiled under the weight of his praise. No one but Gran had ever complimented her before. Gran. Danny's heart ached at the loss. Gran's dead. Colt blinked.
I'm sorry.
She nodded back tears. Thanks. She had to change the subject. Enough hashing over the past. How can I help with your leg?
Grab me two magazines from the table and the duct tape.
After she returned with both, Danny watched while Colt rolled the magazines into a pair of tubes and taped them to his ankle. After he finished, he pushed up to stand and test it out. Will it work?
He shrugged. Don't have much of a choice. Let's grab the gear and go. We need to get out of Eugene.
Streets of Eugene, Oregon. 5 a.m. Colt stumbled and fell to one knee, and Danny bent down to drag him back up to his feet. I think we should stop.
No.
Colt's single word came out in a growl, the pain of his injuries turning the man into a stumbling monosyllabic mess. Danny didn't know how much longer she could support his weight. He'd been so optimistic when they left the apartment, but he underestimated his injuries. Half carrying him for miles took its toll. Every time Colt stumbled and Danny kept him upright, her back screamed. Pretty soon, both of them would collapse. She looked around her. They were in a residential neighborhood. From the looks of the quiet shuttered houses, the army had already cleared this sector. That meant they weren't safe. No one would help them here. Wrapping her arm around Colt's waist, Danny helped him walk. They made it another 20 feet until he fell, face first, onto the sidewalk. Danny slammed her hands over her mouth to keep from screaming. She crouched beside him, yanking on his arm. "Colt! Colt, you have to get up!" It was no use. Colt was unconscious. She kneeled on the ground and smacked his face, her open palm as loud as a gunshot in the silence. Colt didn't move. Danny didn't know what to do. She bent closer to his ear. "Colt, please, you have to get up." She tugged on his arm again. Nothing. Dragging herself up, she approached the nearest house, a little bungalow with bright yellow paint and daisies out front. She took the front steps, two at a time, and knocked on the door. "Hello? Hello, is anyone in there? My friend needs help. Hello?" She leaned back to look at the second story, but not a single curtain moved. Crap. She tried the next house, another two-story with a rocking chair on the front porch and a welcome sign by the door. No answer. The next and the next and the next were the same. Either the street was abandoned, or no one was willing to help. No one would take the chance. Danny ran back to Colt. She beat on his back. "Wake up! You can't freaking quit on me! Everyone else in my life has quit on me. You're not going to, do you hear me?" Her words turned to sobs. "Please, just get up." The sound of a car engine filtered through the houses, and Danny lurched to her feet. She grabbed Colt by the arms and tugged. He moved an inch. She pulled again, but it was no use. 200 pounds of dead weight were impossible to move. After all they had been through, after everything they survived that night, they would be captured. She thought about the soldier in the bathroom, and her hands went to her neck. "Hey!" Danny spun around, her eyes wide with the fear at what might be coming. An older man stood across the street. He waved.
"Are you with him?"
He pointed at Colt. "Yes." She hesitated, but what choice did she have? She had to trust him. She looked at Colt. "He's unconscious. I can't move him." The man crossed the street and bent to check Colt's pulse.
"He's still alive. Let's flip him over. I'll grab one arm, you grab the other. We can drag him into my cellar."
The engine noise increased as the man flipped Colt onto his back.
"We need to hurry."
With the stranger helping, Danny managed to pull Colt across the road and into the side yard between two buildings. As they eased into the shadows, headlights lit up the street.
"Hurry, down here."
The man motioned to a pair of open storm doors. He went first, holding up Colt's torso, and Danny picked up Colt's feet. Her head disappeared below the opening as the headlights lit up the house. The second the lights disappeared, the stranger reached up and shut the cellar doors.
Day 21. Chapter 30. Colt. Basement. Location unknown. Eugene, Oregon. 9 p.m. Colt groaned and twisted onto his side, but pain in his arm forced him back. His hands rubbed over soft sheets and he blinked. "Where am I?" The last thing he remembered was trudging through the night with Danny at his side, every step more painful than the last. He tried to sit up and a familiar voice spoke up.
"Hey, stranger."
Colt opened his eyes and a pretty young girl came into focus. Light brown hair cut short in a pixie style, bright brown eyes open wide, a smile that would light up the darkest room.
"Danny?"
She smiled even wider.
"Hey, Colt."
He struggled to sit up, They were in a bedroom with a pair of twin beds and a small nightstand between them. A little lantern lit up the space.
Where are we?
Mr. Wilkins' basement.
And that would be where?
She exhaled.
Inside the Army's cleared zone. We've been safe so far, but it's touch and go. Now that you're awake, we can talk about options.
Colt shook his head. I don't understand.
Danny smiled again.
You've been asleep for almost 2 days.
Damn.
Colt glanced down at his arm. The bandage had been changed. He pulled back the covers to reveal a clean t-shirt, shorts, and a leg free of duct tape. A fresh bandage covered the knife wound.
Who's helping us?
They call themselves the Resistance.
She almost giggled.
If you think you can walk, you can see for yourself. It's just about time for the nightly meeting.
Colt twisted in the bed and reached for a pair of folded-up pants. He slid them up over his tender ankle and bandaged leg and managed to stand without collapsing. Danny helped him to the door.
You're sure they're trustworthy?
She nodded.
Come on, you'll see.
Together, they hobbled out into a basement living room. 6 people turned and stood at the sound of their approach. Colt took in their faces. A pair of men in their early 30s, a woman of 50, maybe older. A young man who couldn't have been much older than Danny. Colt paused at a woman holding a little brown and gray dog.
Melody?
Hi, Colt.
Danny glanced up at him.
You know each other?
Colt rubbed the back of his neck.
We met on the street after the ambush. She was nice enough to talk to me. She told me the truth about the Army's activity here.
Melody nodded.
It's good to see you up on your feet.
She held one hand out to the man standing beside her.
This is Harvey Wilkins. It's his house we're in.
Colt turned to the man and paused. He was older, maybe mid-60s, with thinning gray hair and a patient expression. Something in Colt's memory caught, and he tried to place it.
I'm sorry, have we met?
Only in passing. I own a bookshop across from the sporting goods store.
The memory clicked.
You were there when the ambush happened. I saw you standing across the street watching.
Harvey held out his hand.
Yes, that was me. When I saw you in the street here, I knew you were one of the good guys. I helped Danielle get you inside.
Colt glanced at her and mouthed, Danielle. She shrugged, smiling. It seemed like so much had happened since he'd been unconscious.
Thank you all for helping us. I don't know what we would have done without your generosity.
Harvey nodded.
You're welcome, but it's not all altruistic. We're hoping once you're well that you can help us.
With the Army?
Yes. We have to do something. They're still clearing sectors of town, but it won't be long before they're finished. Then what will happen? Work camps? Raids? They won't let us stay in our homes forever.
Harvey glanced around at the group of people assembled.
We won't let them take everything from us. It isn't right.
Colt turned to Danny. He'd always thought that if something like this happened, he would disappear, turn into a nomad, and live in the backcountry all on his own. No one to care about but himself, no hard choices.
But she changed him.
He didn't want to leave her here and set off with nothing but a pack and his wits. He wanted to protect her, keep her safe, watch her grow into the adult he knew she could be. Colt reached out and took her hand. She squeezed.
Going up against a group like this won't be easy. They're well-trained, follow orders, heavily armed. They won't go down without a fight.
We know. That's why we need your help.
Colt didn't know what to say. How could this little group of civilians ever hope to go against an organized militia?
Colt could help, but not enough.
The boy, close to Danny's age, spoke up.
Granddad, it's about time. Can I turn it on?
Sure, Will.
The boy rushed to the coffee table and kneeled in front of it. A little radio sat on the tabletop with a cord running up the wall. At first, Colt thought it was power, but when he saw the kid crank a lever on the side of the radio, he realized it was an antenna. Will twisted a knob and leaned back, waiting. All of the locals went back to their spots in chairs and the couch. Danny tugged on Colt's hand. They walked over, and Colt sat in an overstuffed chair, Danny on the arm. The radio crackled to life. Good evening. The time is 9:30 Pacific Standard, and it has been 21 days since the United States power grid failed. My name is Walter Sloan.
Colt stared at the radio. The pilot from the plane? It can't be.
I'm broadcasting again this evening to give everyone listening hope. Although we are facing the toughest ordeal our country has had to face in over a generation, we will survive. Everyone listening tonight has the ability to weather the storm. Wherever you are, start preparing. Stop looking for the government or the military or anyone else to help you. The best person to help right now is you. Look around you. Find friends and neighbors you can trust. People who want to beat these odds. Don't let adversity stop you.
Colt leaned back in the chair. The voice was indeed that of Walter Sloan, the pilot who emergency landed the 747 that brought him to Eugene, Oregon. He'd made it.
Wherever he was broadcasting from, the man had survived. Walter kept speaking about the future, how to prepare, what needed to be done to survive. The more he talked, the more Colt knew the man was right. This wasn't a time to go off on his own. Even if he could convince Danny to come with him, how long would they last out there in the wild? A year? More? At some point, they would have to stop running. They would need to settle down. Colt had been around enough. He'd experienced enough of life to know he could survive without a wife or a lover or even friends. He glanced at Danny. She was only 15. All of that was still ahead of her. He couldn't ask her to give it all up. Not if he didn't have to. Colt turned back to the radio. Assemble the basics. Water, food, shelter. But go beyond that. Find a favorite book, a treasured necklace, a picture your kid made before the world fell apart. Make it your talisman. Hold on to it. Remember our life the way it was before. Not the video games, and the 24/7 news, and the never-ending quest for escape. But the little things, the simpler things we can all get back to. That's how you'll stay human. That's how you'll survive. This great country of ours will rebuild. This isn't the end of us, and it isn't the end of you. Have faith. Until tomorrow, this is Walter Sloan saying good night and good luck.
The radio fell silent, and Colt looked up. Harvey sat in a chair opposite Colt, watching him.
How long has Walter been broadcasting?
Harvey glanced at the radio.
Only a few days. Why?
He was the pilot who landed my plane.
Everyone in the room turned to look at Colt. Will, the teenager, spoke up.
You know him?
Colt nodded.
Last I saw of him, he was headed to Sacramento to find his wife and daughter.
Even with the antenna, I don't think we could get a Sacramento signal here.
Colt thought it over. He must have made it out and come this way.
Danny leaned close.
Do you really think he's right? Can we get through this?
If we can find enough like-minded people, then yes, I think we can.
Colt turned back to Harvey.
If you really want to stop Colonel Jarvis and his men, I'll help. It won't be easy. Hell, we might be signing our death warrants, but if you all want to take a stand, I'll stand beside you.
Melody spoke up.
Why? Why help us?
For one, you helped me. You could have left me in the street to die, but you risked your safety to bring me here and take care of me. Two, you've kept Danny safe.
He paused, choosing his next words carefully.
But more importantly, you're all willing to fight. It's easy to surrender. It's harder than hell to fight back.
Harvey stood and closed the distance between them. He held out his hand and smiled.
Welcome to the resistance.
Chaos gains.
3 weeks without power. Day 22. Chapter 1. Colt. Wilkins residence, Eugene, Oregon. 10 a.m. The black thread pinched a lump of skin, and Colt tugged it away from the healing wound. He winced, but kept going, checking the entire length of ragged stitches for signs of infection.
So far, so good.
His leg still hurt when he lowered into a crouch, the quad muscle tender and not healed. Stab wounds didn't repair themselves overnight. After dabbing the wound with antibiotic ointment, he applied a fresh bandage and pulled on his pants. Thanks to the people who saved them, Colt had clean clothes that weren't coated in dried blood or soot from the fire he and Danny barely escaped. Bruises covered his ribs and back, giant purple and yellow splotches where he slammed into the ground after jumping from Danny's apartment window. The grass lessened the impact, but three stories still hurt like a Mack truck. Palpating the worst of the bruises, Colt checked for broken ribs or internal bleeding. Nothing obvious. He was damn lucky. If only the National Guard aimed as poorly as they PT'd. With clenched teeth, Colt lifted his left arm and inspected the bullet wound to his bicep. The round hit fast, exiting out the rear of his muscle and leaving a clean hole. He guessed the guardsman fired from 15 feet away. At such close range, the yaw of the round was minimal, and the bullet sliced right through. Colt was lucky. Again. In a few weeks, he would be as good as new, plus a few scars. A knock at the bedroom door startled him into the present, and he grabbed a T-shirt from the bed. "Come in." He slipped the black fabric over his head, gritting his teeth as he eased his wounded arm into the sleeve. As his head popped through the top, Colt caught Melody eyeing his bruises.
"I can come back later."
A hint of white teeth appeared as she nibbled on her lower lip. "No, it's okay. I'm done." Colt tugged the shirt down the rest of the way and slid over on the mattress. "Come on in." Melody tucked a loose strand of hair behind her ear and ducked into the room. She sat on the only chair, an old part of a dining room set now spread around the basement, and smiled.
"A stab wound, gunshot, and a million bruises? It's lucky you survived."
Colt hid most of a grin. "Occupational hazard." Her head tilted.
"Danny said you were an air marshal."
"Before the power went out, I was. Now I consider myself more of a mercenary." Melody eased back in the chair, her green eyes alive with interest.
"Are you for hire?"
"For the right price." She laughed, and Colt raised an eyebrow. "Is she mocking me?" The more Melody laughed, the more Colt didn't know what to do. He never had this effect on women. Sometimes they would smile or give him their number, but laugh at him? Never. He slid forward on the bed and rested his forearms on his knees. "What's so funny?" After a moment, Melody composed herself, pushing back a hunk of black hair and breathing deep.
"3 weeks ago, I worked as a vet tech for an animal hospital up the road. Now, I'm sitting here talking to a guy decked in head-to-toe tactical gear who fought the army, and he's not the bad guy."
"You make it sound like an action movie." Melody sighed.
"I'm going to miss those."
"Me too. Bruce Willis had at least one more in him."
"I'm more of a Daniel Craig fan myself."
Colt kept his comment about stuntmen to himself, opting instead to reach for his service pistol. Although the holster didn't survive the fall from Danny's apartment, the trusty Sig Sauer didn't have a scratch. Obtaining a replacement holster was a top priority. He caught her eyes, tracking his movements, and Colt changed the subject. "So you worked for a vet?" Melody nodded.
"Dr. Benthorne over on Euclid. He's been in business 40 years. Well, he was, anyway."
Her face fell.
"Now there aren't any animals to see."
Colt glanced at the open door, half expecting the little furball she called a dog to scamper in. "What do you mean? You've still got a dog."
"Only because Doug hid her down here in the basement. The army confiscated all the pets in this area."
"You can't be serious."
"I wish I weren't, but it's true. Every dog, cat, hamster, gerbil, rabbit, everything. If anyone had a pet, it got loaded up into a big camouflage truck and carted off. No one's seen a single one since. I think Lottie's the only dog left on the whole street."
Colt whistled short and low. If the army took residents' pets, it wasn't to keep them alive or check them for diseases or anything noble. Whatever Colonel Jarvis decided to do with those animals, he pitied the men tasked with carrying it out.
"They're all dead, aren't they?"
Colt lifted his eyes. From the way Melody watched him, body still, one arm wrapped around her middle, she already knew. "That would be my best guess, yeah." He didn't tell her what they probably did with the edible ones.
It's senseless and cruel. Why would they do that?
Control. Power. Now there are no dogs to bite them or alert an owner to their presence. One less thing tying people to their homes.
But they've let us stay. They haven't even taken our food yet. Why would they just take the animals and leave us here?
I thought they confiscated weapons, too. Melody nodded.
They did, but most of us didn't have anything. Doug had a handgun. That's it.
From what Colt managed to learn the evening before, Doug Harper worked as a City of Eugene fireman before the power went out. He tried to keep the firehouse together after the grid failed, but the National Guard ordered him to go home. They would handle any fires. Did the Army take it? She nodded. Damn it. That left only what Danny and Colt managed to find and carry. 4 M4s and his service pistol. Not nearly enough. He rubbed at his beard, scratching the skin beneath the inch-long strands.
How many people in the neighborhood are like you?
What do you mean?
Willing to stand up to the Army.
Melody's mouth opened, but she shut it again, pressing her pink lips together until they thinned. She glanced at the door.
I don't know what we can do.
Colt blinked.
But you took us in. You patched me up and protected us.
Harvey did the heavy lifting. I just cleaned your wounds.
He motioned at his injuries.
You did all this?
She nodded.
Thank you.
Colt wished he could do more than offer a couple of words. He wished he could stop the madness. Melody's reluctance to fight didn't make sense. He reached for his boots and socks.
Harvey called all of you the Resistance. Was that a lie?
One of Melody's eyebrows shot up.
Just because we won't cower in our homes doesn't make us soldiers. I don't know if I can shoot another man. Harvey and Gloria are old. Will is just a kid.
Great. I've been saved by a bunch of scared, untrained normals.
So, tell me what the last 3 weeks have been like. Where were you when the power went out? When did the Army come through?
Melody ran through the basics.
We got the emergency alert just before the power went out, but I didn't know what it meant, and neither did any of the girls in the office. We closed up shop, and I went home like usual. Lottie comes to work with me, so when I got home, we were outside playing fetch when it sounded like an explosion out front.
She pulled her legs up onto the chair, tucking one beneath the other, as she recounted what Colt saw from 37,000 feet in the air.
It was crazy. The transformer a few houses down caught on fire. Flames leapt across the power lines. I thought the houses were going to go.
They didn't?
No. My brother and I share our house, and when he got home, he went straight to work, putting out the fires with extinguishers he always keeps on hand.
Benefits of a firefighter in the family?
Melody nodded.
Then we just waited. Doug went to work, tried to do his job, but a day or two later the Army swooped in, driving down the streets in those big military vehicles, using megaphones to give people instructions.
What did they say?
She peered at the ceiling, thinking.
At first it was just shelter in place. If you need a medical attention, come to the university stadium, that sort of thing. A few days later, it changed.
Colt's ears pricked.
How so?
That's when they started taking inventories. Every house got a couple cases of bottled water and their food supplies checked. If they were low, they got MREs.
Sounds great.
She nodded.
It was, but then they started asking about weapons and skill sets. All the guns and ammo they found were confiscated. For our own safety, they said. And anyone who had a connection to the military was placed on a truck and taken to the university campus.
Melody paused.
I don't think they've come back.
Whoa. Although the initial efforts seemed friendly and helpful, the National Guard unit occupying Eugene turned quickly. Taking weapons and quarantining anyone with the ability to fight meant they expected trouble.
What about the pets? When did that happen?
Last week. They come through once a week to hand out more water and do more inspections. Our street has Friday.
It fit with what he heard on the radio the other night, clearing sector by sector, taking anyone who resisted and plying the rest with essential supplies. It wouldn't be long until all the remaining residents depended on the rogue unit for survival. In a matter of weeks, they would all be pawns, or worse.
Colt leaned back on the bed, thinking it over. At last, he stood up. If the army decides they want what you have, will you fight for it? Melody ran her tongue over her lower lip.
I don't know how.
Hey, Colt!
Danny's voice carried from the other side of the door before the teenager poked her head into the room. Her gaze darted to Melody before settling on Colt.
Sorry.
What's up?
Mr. Wilkins asked to speak with you.
Colt smiled.
Tell him I'll be there in a minute.
Danny nodded and disappeared before Colt could say anything else.
She's tough.
Melody stood up and turned off the portable lantern lighting the space. The room fell into darkness, and Colt ushered her toward the stairs.
Tough doesn't begin to cover it.
Chapter 2. Danny. Wilkins residence, Eugene, Oregon, 11:30 a.m. Colt and Melody emerged from the basement, and Danny turned away. She had no right to be jealous, but seeing the pair of them together, she tugged her sleeve over her knuckles and strode from the room, eager to get out of there. The Wilkinsons' house sat in the middle of a residential street with a big oak tree in the backyard. A small back room was tucked into the corner of the house. Maybe it used to be an office or a nursery. Danny didn't know. Now it was the only place she could be alone. As she entered the room, she froze. Will sat on the floor, a smartphone, laptop, and tablet spread out in a fan around him. Danny stepped back to leave when he tilted his head.
You can come in. I won't bite.
She ran her thumb over a jagged fingernail. All right. Will's brown hair hung over his forehead, obscuring his eyes from view. He tinkered with some sort of device, sticking cables from it into each piece of equipment and mumbling. Danny eased over to the picture window, focusing on the gnarled trunk of the tree outside. After a few minutes, Will let out a frustrated snort. Something wrong? He pinned Danny with a pointed glare.
Only everything. She turned back to the window. Doesn't it bother you?
She didn't move.
What? Not having any electricity. No phones, no internet, no lights for God's sake. There's nothing.
Danny resisted the urge to scratch a mosquito bite on her arm. I never had a phone or a computer.
Are you serious?
She nodded, still not looking his way.
I don't know what I would have done without them. How do you talk to your friends or do your schoolwork?
Danny wasn't about to tell him friends weren't part of her life, and homework didn't matter. How could she think about grades and schoolwork when every day she opened the apartment door, she was bracing herself for the inevitable? Her mother's rants when she was too high to think. Her depression when she couldn't score. The lack of food in the house hit Danny harder than any failed history test. She stuffed a hand in a pocket and turned to him with a shrug.
Why is it so important now? It's not like anyone else can use one of those things.
Will tucked his chin and picked up the phone, mashing his thumb against the home button over and over.
My parents must be worried sick.
I thought you lived with Mr. and Mrs. Wilkins.
They're my grandparents. I was only supposed to be here a week.
Danny scrunched up her nose. Where are your mom and dad?
In Vail. Skiing.
The last word came out as an accusation.
They should have been back 2 days after the power went out.
Oh. Danny thought about how far away Colorado must be from Oregon, trying to remember the map she had to study in geography. Far was an understatement.
I take it you like your parents?
He glowered.
I love them. They have to be worried sick, not knowing if I'm all right, wondering about Gran and Granddad. I know they'll be coming home, but I want to talk to them, see them.
He tossed the phone on the ground and tore his hands through his hair.
If they don't come back soon, what's going to happen to all of us?
Danny didn't know what to say. Her mother only used her when convenient. Her father died before she could remember. Only her own grandmother cared for her like Will's parents must care for him. But her grandmother was gone. She pushed the grief down with a dry swallow. Puffery wasn't really her thing. What if they don't come back? What are you going to do? Will's head jerked up, his lashes wet. He stared at her, nostrils flaring like a bull about to charge. Danny held up her hands. Just asking. They'll come back. They have to. Will scooped up his useless electronics in a rush and fled the room. The second he disappeared, Danny exhaled in relief. After years of living with her mother, and now the failure of the power grid, Danny almost forgot normal families existed. Homes where moms and dads hugged their kids and cooked them dinner. Where floors were clean, and the heat didn't shut off in the winter because no one could pay the bill. Danny stared out at the oak, following the path of each bent and twisted branch like an arm of a convoluted family tree. Her eyes grew dry, and she blinked, but didn't turn away.
Staring out into the abyss won't do you any good. Come on in here and help me with these peas.
Danny spun around. Mrs. Wilkins stood in the doorway, a pleasant smile brightening her face.
Me? You want my help? I don't see anyone else in here.
Mrs. Wilkins turned around and headed toward the kitchen, and Danny followed. She eased into the small space and lingered beside the table. Mrs. Wilkins sat down and motioned at the sink.
Use some of that hand sanitizer on the counter and pull up a chair. My arthritis is acting up this morning.
Danny did as instructed, pumping a glob of clear gel into her hand and rubbing until it evaporated. She pulled out a wooden chair and sat on the worn calico pad. A bowl of things that looked like green beans sat in front of Mrs. Wilkins.
I thought you said peas.
I did. She plucked one from the bowl and held it up.
Alaska peas from my garden out back.
Those look like funny green beans. Mrs. Wilkins paused, the vegetable frozen in mid-air.
Gracious, don't tell me you've never shelled a pea. I didn't even know they grew like that.
Mrs. Wilkins laughed, thick and hearty, and her glasses slid down her nose.
Well, I never. Let me show you how it's done.
Holding the bean thing in one hand, she grabbed the free end in a pincher grip.
First, you take the pea pod, and you pinch the end like this. If you squeeze hard enough, the whole pod should just pop open.
She demonstrated, pressing her fingers together until the pea pod split. As she spread the outside apart, a row of little peas emerged.
Then you open it, dump the peas in the bowl, and put the empty pod in the bag. Make sense?
Danny nodded. Now you try. She picked up a pea pod and frowned.
Peas grow like beans?
Yep, if you ever split a green bean open, you'll see little seeds inside too. Just like this. These are Alaska peas, the earliest pea there is. They can grow here year-round.
Danny didn't know a thing about gardening, but to see so many peas come out of a tiny plot the size of a pickup truck out back made her head spin.
How long have you been a gardener? Mrs. Wilkins whistled.
All my life. My father ran a farm on the coast. Every year when I was a kid, I picked beans for the local farmers, down one side of the row and up the next.
Did it pay well?
Enough to buy my clothes for the school year and give my mom a bit besides.
How old were you? Mrs. Wilkins talked while she shelled, never once stopping work.
I started when I was 10, did it every summer until the farm got bought out by a corporation and trucked in migrant labor.
Danny opened a pod as Mrs. Wilkins showed her and dumped the bright green peas into the bowl.
So all that time, you were making money in the summer. Could you have done it during the year, too? Sure. After beans came lettuce and berries and a whole bunch of other crops.
Mrs. Wilkins dumped another set of peas into the bowl before reaching for a pod. While they worked, she explained all about the different crops in Oregon, and what grew when and how best to plant them. Danny couldn't believe it. Never once had she thought about growing her own food or working the land to earn money. "I've never been to a farm."
"Not once."
Danny shook her head and grabbed another pod, copying Mrs. Wilkins' movements as she squeezed the end and dumped the peas into the bowl. "I've always lived in town."
"That's no reason not to get out and visit the country. Didn't your folks ever take you out for a drive?"
The pea pod slipped from her fingers and landed in her lap. Danny reached for it, head down. "My dad died when I was little." She hesitated, trying to find the right words. "My mom wasn't much for that sort of thing." The older woman reached out and patted Danny's shoulder.
"Well, that's a shame. If we ever figure a way out of this house, I'm taking you to a farm, first thing."
A lump rose in Danny's throat, but she concentrated on the work, plucking pods from one bowl before popping them open and sliding the peas into the other. She didn't know Mrs. Wilkins. The woman could offer platitudes every day of the week with no intention of fulfilling them. But Danny wanted to believe her. She sneaked a glance at the older woman. Younger than Gran, but a lot older than her mom, Mrs. Wilkins possessed a calm quality of self-assurance Danny lacked. "Would you ever leave here?" Mrs. Wilkins plucked a pod from the bowl, nodding as she popped it open.
"If necessary, yes."
"But what about your garden?" She glanced at the wall ahead. Past it, the little garden sat in the sun.
"I'll harvest everything I can. Save as many seeds as possible and go."
"That's it?"
"Mm-hmm. Life is all about facing challenges head on. You can't take a back seat in your own life. It's only as good as the effort you put into it."
Mrs. Wilkins scooped the last handful of pods from the bowl and handed a couple to Danny.
"Let's get this finished and I'll show you how to make a fresh pea salad."
Danny glanced at the empty doorway. She wanted to know what Colt and Mr. Wilkins were talking about in the front room. Assembling a rebellion? Attacking the army? Running away in the middle of the night? She would help Mrs. Wilkins with the salad. But after that, she would find out what they had planned, no matter what.
Chapter 3. Colt. Wilkins Residence. Eugene, Oregon, 11:30 a.m. Harvey Wilkins stood at the front picture window, staring through the lace curtains at the solemn street beyond. Colt imagined on a typical day that same street would be bustling with activity. Cars pulling out, joggers trotting past, kids on bikes, and dogs on leashes. Thanks to Colonel Jarvis and his men occupying the town, everything changed. He stopped beside Harvey and nodded hello.
"How are you feeling?"
Colt bobbed and weaved like a boxer.
"Pretty good. I can't thank you enough for rescuing me and Danny the other day. Without your help, we'd be at the mercy of the army by now."
Harvey almost spat on the beige carpet.
"They aren't the army. Not anymore. They're a militia."
Colt agreed. The National Guard unit stationed at the University of Oregon wasn't taking orders from the United States. They couldn't be. He rubbed at a sore spot on his good arm.
"Melody said the unit inspected homes, took all the weapons and ammunition."
"Mm-hmm. They're going block by block in a cascading grid. Started with the streets closest to the university and fanned out from there."
"That's why some of the shops are untouched."
"Exactly. They got here before the town devolved into chaos and instituted order right away. The college kids didn't have a chance to get rowdy. The militia cleared them out. Every student who had a place to go got sent on their way with a backpack full of food and water."
Colt blinked.
"Why?"
Harvey turned to him, the lines of his face deepening into a scowl.
"My guess is to eliminate the threat. University of Oregon has over 20,000 students. That's a lot of able-bodied young men."
"Who might not like to be corralled into line and told what to do."
"Yep.
It made sense from a tactical standpoint. Eliminate the hordes of young people who could form an insurgency and take over the space they vacated. Colonel Jarvis would never earn Colt's respect, but the man planned well. Now he controlled a massive college campus with access to cafeterias, medical facilities, and tons of dorms. Add in all the crowd control supplies from porta-potties to temporary showers and warehouses full of food, and Jarvis could live like a king or a despot. How familiar are you with the university? Harvey ran his fingers down and around his mouth. A perpetual 5 o'clock shadow lurked beneath his skin despite an apparent shave. My bookstore catered to college kids. We sold used textbooks, required reading, and a bunch of used paperbacks, that sort of thing. So I know a little, but I'm no expert. How much food and water would you guess the militia, as you call it, has stockpiled? Enough for a good long while. Even if the college supplies are running low, they've secured every store in town. Harvey stepped away from the window and motioned for Colt to follow. He perched on the edge of a worn plaid sofa and pointed at a map spread out on the coffee table. We're here, and the university is here. Colt figured the distance to be about 2 miles. Between us and the university are a ton of shops, a couple grocery stores, my bookstore, a hardware store, and a whole bunch more. The sporting goods store across from your shop. Harvey nodded. The militia cleared every single one. A few had been looted, probably by people passing through on their way north, but most were still intact. We might be a college town, but the locals still know each other. These stores are run by everyday folks who don't need to loot and rob to get by. Colt thought back to the sporting goods store and the bodies he found inside. What happened when someone resisted? My best guess, they killed them. I found a family in the sporting goods place. They'd been shot at close range and left to rot, even the kid. Harvey closed his eyes for a moment. I feared that was the case. The Millers were good people, but Chuck wouldn't take a military confiscation lying down. He wasn't the stand-back-and-let-it-happen sort. Neither am I. Watching you walk away from a burning truck and a bunch of dead militiamen, I came to that same conclusion. Colt snorted. Would have been nice to get a bit of assistance there. Harvey's eyes darkened. I didn't know if I could trust you. He paused. Still don't, to be honest. Colt understood the man's hesitation. He shared it. Better to be cautious than foolhardy. I hear you. What are your plans? Colt hedged. Depends on yours, I guess. The wrinkles around Harvey's eyes crinkled as he squinted. I don't follow. You called your little group of people the Resistance. Did you mean that, or was it just a throwaway name that popped into your head? I meant it. Harvey straightened, his chest swelling with determination. I won't become anyone's servant. Colt lowered his voice. What about everyone else? Your wife, grandson, Doug, and Melody? Harvey leaned back, spreading one arm across the length of the sofa's cushions. We're the only people in the neighborhood who care. Everyone else sees the military uniforms and thinks they're saved. Hell, half of them think the power's coming back on. But you're not that delusional. Harvey blew out a breath. Not in that way. Talk to me about the Ducks and their rank in the Pac-12, and you might glimpse my crazy. Colt chuckled, and the latent tension in the room eased. I'm a good man, Harvey, and Danny and I appreciate the hospitality. Speaking of, Harvey focused on the open doorway leading to the kitchen. How did you and Danny meet? She told us you aren't related. I convinced an army soldier that detaining her for stealing wasn't in his best interest. After that, we stuck together. She got any family? Gloria tried to ask before you woke up, but the girl shut down completely. Colt shook his head. Not anymore. Well, her mother's still alive, but she's worthless. Father and grandmother are dead. I'm afraid I'm the closest she's got to family now. Poor kid. Tell me about it. I'm terrible with anything domestic. Harvey smiled, and the years of age peeled away. He could have been a decade younger, maybe more. Give him some brown hair instead of gray, and the man could pass for 40 with a grin.
Gloria says the same thing about me. Calls me hopeless in the kitchen.
The two of them traded stories back and forth for a while. Colt about his time as an air marshal and a SEAL before that. Harvey about growing up in rural Oregon and the opening of his bookstore almost 20 years before. Falling into a comfortable rhythm, Colt almost forgot about the end of the world and the bounty on his head. After a while, he confronted it head on.
You know Colonel Jarvis is out for my blood, right? I figured as much. Then you know how much danger your family is in right now. I've got a pretty good guess. And you're all right with that?
Harvey pulled off the couch and drew Colt's attention back to the map.
The way I figure it, they've got to control most of town south of the Willamette River and all the way west to the airport. I don't know if they've taken over the entire city, but it's only a matter of time.
He pointed out the neighborhood and drew an imaginary line around where he believed the militia controlled.
We're so far inside the line that they aren't focused on us right now. It's too big of an area to police 24/7. We're talking 40 square miles if they occupy the entire town, more if they spread to the populated areas outside the city limits or across the river to Springfield.
How are they controlling access?
Roadblocks and barricades, mostly. All the bridges are under their control, with Humvees blocking anyone from coming or going. They've also siphoned all the cars and shut down all the gas stations. There's no fuel for miles.
Damn. Colt ran a hand through his hair.
How many soldiers do you guess?
I don't know. Hundreds. Colt nodded.
A lieutenant colonel like Jarvis would be in command of a battalion at least. Even assuming massive attrition due to the collapse of the grid, there could easily be 300 soldiers under his command. Maybe more. There would be no way to take them out. They couldn't fight them directly. It would be a suicide mission. But Harvey had a point. Even 500 soldiers would be a thin force for such a large city. Confiscating weapons and gas and rationing water would help control the masses, but the army couldn't be everywhere. Add in the hesitation he heard from Sergeant Gunther when Jarvis ordered him to kill civilians and the odds improved. Maybe it wouldn't be impossible.
Do you want to fight?
I...
The front door to the house slammed open, and Melody's brother burst inside. His chest heaved from exertion, and sweat bloomed across his pale shirt. Harvey stood up.
Doug, what's going on?
Doug shut the door and rushed to the window. He pulled back the curtain and peered up the street, eyes focused, head bent.
Patrol is coming.
It's a little early for a water delivery, isn't it?
Doug shook his head.
Not water. It's a Humvee with a gun mounted on the top.
Colt surged to his feet.
A turret mount? Those are 50 cal at least. You only use those to blow something to bits.
Doug dropped the curtain.
You need to hide. They're coming.
Chapter 4. Colt. Wilkins Residence, Eugene, Oregon. 12:30 p.m.
Colt spun around as Danny, Melody, and Gloria rushed into the room.
What's going on?
Danny's eyes shifted back and forth, looking first at Doug and then back at Colt.
The army's here patrolling. Doug wants us to hide.
What do you want to do?
Colt answered honestly.
Stay up here and help.
No way.
Doug sliced his hands in a chopping motion across his chest.
Not gonna happen. If those guys find out you're here, we're all in trouble.
He's right.
Melody stepped forward with her little dog, shoving the fluffy thing in his direction.
You need to get to the basement now. Take Lottie with you.
Colt froze.
Take it? He stared at the 5 pounds of fur and slobber.
Animals weren't his thing. He'd rather be in a dirt hole in the desert fending off 100 hostiles.
I'll get her.
Danny rushed up and scooped the dog into her arms. It pawed her chest and licked her cheek, and she giggled. The sound cut through Colt's annoyance, and he glanced at Danny.
Have I ever heard her laugh?
Come on, this way.
Doug motioned toward the basement stairs, and Danny followed, leading the way to a door partially hidden behind the hot water heater.
Colt squeezed into the small room as Doug admonished them both.
Stay quiet. When it's clear, we'll let you out.
Colt bristled. What if there's a fight, or they demand to come inside? I can help.
Not this time, you can't.
Doug shut the door, and the sounds of something heavy scraping across the ground filtered into the room.
Is Doug shutting them in? Locking the door?
He turned to Danny. What is he doing? She plunked onto an olive-green cot shoved against the rear wall.
Hiding us. They got a bunch of paint cans stacked on a plastic shelving unit, and they pull it in front of the room whenever anyone might come down here.
And that's worked so far?
That's what Mrs. Wilkins said.
Danny crossed her legs and settled the little dog on her lap. As she stroked the dog's head, the fur on its face pulled back and exposed beady black eyes.
Doug hid Lottie here when the army came through the first time. Melody showed me the space while you were unconscious, just in case we needed it.
Colt stalked to the end of the room and spun on his heel. About 10 by 8, he guessed, with a pair of cots, a stack of water and rations, and a glowing portable lantern on the floor. It would hold a couple of people, but not much more. He assumed Harvey built it with that in mind. He crouched, supporting himself with a cool wall of concrete blocks. The stitches in his leg pulled, but Colt ignored the discomfort. Saving Danny was worth the pain. Despite the bruises now yellowing all over her body, she looked good, happy even. Colt played cool, picking at a loose strand on his pants while he asked a question. He needed information.
Did you get to know anyone while I was unconscious?
Mrs. Wilkins is really nice. She cut my hair.
Colt risked a glance.
It's pretty.
Danny tilted her head as a faint blush crept up her neck.
Thanks.
What about Will? Did you get to know him?
The boy had to be about Danny's age, but Colt couldn't get a read on him.
No, he's always trying to get his electronics to work.
Good. At least Colt didn't have to worry about some teenage romance. It would be harder to keep Danny safe if a boy got in the way.
What about Mr. Wilkins or Melody?
Danny hesitated. His tactics weren't the smoothest, but Colt needed to know, and time was precious. This was the first chance they had to speak frankly since Colt woke up in a stranger's bed the day before. Learning everything possible about their saviors would help Colt make tough decisions later. He eased to the floor, grimacing as a stab of pain sliced through his quad.
You don't have to tell me if you don't want to.
It's not that.
Danny shook her head, and the cropped strands of her hair bounced. He caught a glimpse of the scab covering the back of her head when she passed him earlier, but the new haircut suited her, much better than blood and dirt and matted tangles. After a few moments of petting the dog in silence, Danny's head jerked up.
Do you want to stay here?
He glanced around, pretending to take stock.
I suppose I could make do, but after a while, I'll miss the sunlight.
Danny snorted.
You know what I mean. With Mr. and Mrs. Wilkins. Do you want to stay here in Eugene with them?
He rubbed his beard, mussing up the wiry strands as he thought it over.
It means fighting Colonel Jarvis, putting our lives on the line again.
I know.
What do you want?
Danny's eyes flicked up and away.
I'm grateful they helped us.
But...
A thump upstairs drew Danny's focus to the ceiling.
Shh! They might be inside.
She huddled into the corner, clutching the little dog to her chest. Tucked into a ball, she looked more child than young adult. Thanks to the hardship of her life, Danny possessed a strength and maturity well beyond her 15 years. It was easy to forget her age. Colt followed her line of sight, gaze lingering on the joists above. Any guardsman worth his boots would find them down here. With only one way in and out, the room hurt as much as it helped. Next time, no matter what Doug said, he wasn't hiding in the basement.
Do you know anything about Doug? What about that guy who was here the other night? Lucas, I think?
Danny wrinkled her nose and glanced again at the ceiling. Her voice barely traveled the 4 feet to Colt's ears.
They don't pay much attention to me.
That's how it should be.
What have you observed?
She squirmed on the cot, and the dog jumped off her lap.
Lottie, come back.
Danny reached for the fluff ball, but it scrambled down from the cot and trotted over to Colt. He glared at it, willing it to go back.
I didn't know dogs came this small.
It looks like a guinea pig. Stifling a laugh,